The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step being discussed tonight. So this evening, we are discussing five, six, and seven. And I'm going to turn the meeting over to David.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's David.
Hello, David.
Grateful to be here and grateful to be sober tonight. We usually say something before we start. This format is a little bit different. We're a big book based step study. We're going to do steps 5, 6, and 7 tonight, and then next week come back. We'll do 8, and we just keep marching through the steps as we go, using the big book rather than the 12 and 12. And we're here just to share our experience, strength, and hope on the steps. That's it. We're not here to teach. We're not here to worship the big book. Treat it kind of like a cookbook, just a set of instructions that we follow to get a result. And so that's what we're trying to do, and that's why we're here tonight. So tonight we're going to do steps 5, 6, and 7. And we're going to start off on page 72. We usually don't read this much, but there's several paragraphs in here. So, very first thing. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, to discover the obstacles in our path. We've admitted certain defects. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step of the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we've done well admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reason why we should do so. The best reason is first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. I think I'll say that again. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have kept to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, honesty, in the sense we find it necessary, until they told someone else all their life story.
I should have stopped after all their life story. So here we are. What have we done so far? We've gone through whatever pain it takes to get us here in these chairs in the first place. You guys seem to suggest to me that I'm an alcoholic, that I have a problem that I can't solve. I'm bodily and mentally different than my fellows. Once I start drinking, a craving develops that won't be satisfied. It took me 6 years to reconcile that and finally admit defeat on that simple fact. You guys have suggested that no human power is going to relieve me of alcoholism. And me being my favorite human power, I've tried to exert all my brains and all my schemes and plans and designs and ways of getting away with it, and gym memberships and new jobs, new hobbies, new everything, shiny new everything. It's going to be different this time. I keep trying that and it doesn't work, and I finally give that up. So no human power. God could and would if he were sought. I surrender. I finally give up. What that looked like for me, the short version of that is that I surrendered to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got here when I was 22 years old.
in and out. And when I say in and out, I don't mean I came in and got a sponsor and got a home group and started working the steps and had a spiritual experience and then got drunk. What I mean is I would come in and I would sit in the back row and I would kind of prove to myself that I didn't belong here and then maybe stay for the prayer or maybe just out the door, out in the parking lot, see you later. And then I'd stay sober for 30 days. I stayed sober almost a year one time all by myself. So I keep trying to do that. I can't do it. My last surrender in this current run of sobriety, October 24th, 1989, I was 6 months abstinent of alcohol. I didn't have a drinking problem. And I knew two things. I knew that I was going to get drunk. And I knew I didn't want to. With every fiber in my being, those two ideas, those two completely opposite ideas were battling, you know? I know what it feels like to be about to get drunk, you know, just one broken shoelace away from, that's it. And I quit the job, go, you know, pull up a bar stool. So I know that's happening, and I don't want to anymore, because by this point, I know that if I pick up again, I don't know if I got another 10 years in me living this way, or 10 minutes, or 10 days, and I know I won't care, you know, and I just don't want it anymore. And so I came back to AA one more time. And started doing these things. And I, as I've described, I had a hard time with the spiritual piece. You guys helped me with the method of substitution there. You guys just told me I could make the group my higher power. I could make the simple actions of Alcoholics Anonymous my higher power. And I was able to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was enough to get me right in this darn inventory. And the other thing that kept me from writing the inventory was I didn't want to do this, what we're talking about tonight. I did not want to sit down and tell somebody because I had a bunch of things that I wasn't proud of, but there were two or three of them. They were going to the grave with me. I ain't giving that to nobody. No how, no way, ain't going to happen. So it was a sponsor who said, well, why don't we just not worry about that right now? You just go ahead and write the inventory. You don't have to tell it to anybody. And I kind of knew that was a trick, but I did it anyway. So as we go through the thing, though, I start to find out that, you know, it's very interesting to me, this thing, this simple idea that my problem is other than alcohol. Because one of the old ideas that I had was that if I just stopped drinking, everything would be fine. Everything would just work out fine. If I could just quit doing this, and then the crazy behavior would stop, you know, and I'd be able to show up, I'd be able to keep my promises, life would just straighten out, everything would be fine. And what I offer to people is if you want to find, you know, I don't know how many thousands of mornings I came to, why do I do this to myself? Why do I do this to myself? If you want to find out why you drank, just stop drinking for a little while. It'll become obvious. You know, they look at you funny. They disappoint you. They step on your toes. They don't appreciate you. That's the one that gets me. I fail to be appreciated adequately. I'm the only one? All right. So I'm just miserable sober. I have a sobriety problem. And then I find out in this work that we've done to date that I am self-obsessed. I am selfish to a fault. I thought selfish meant greedy. So I was like, I'm not greedy. I share and share alike. But you guys were suggesting that it was a different kind of selfishness, this self-obsession, this moving through my life through this lens of how does it affect David, you know? And so I'm always, every situation that I'm in, every person that I meet, every job that I do, every relationship that I'm in, all of it, no matter where I find myself, all runs through this filter of what's in it for me. So I step on the toes of my friends, they retaliate, I accumulate resentments, I'm afraid, I have all this selfish sex conduct, all these kind of horrible things that I've been carrying around that I'm never ever gonna tell anybody. I managed to get all that down on paper. So there we are. This requires action on our part. The thing that happened for me was once I found the willingness to do the inventory, when I got to the end of that first inventory, the best job I could, it wasn't perfect, but I really did the best that I could on it. I really couldn't wait to get rid of it. I really couldn't wait to do the fifth step. So it was actually the doing of the fourth step that made me ready for the fifth step. Jeannie?
Yeah, okay. I do want to go back just a minute to page 60 and go over the, if you can't hear me, if you just say so, because I might drift off a little bit, so just let me know. that we are at a point where we're in agreement with three things. We're alcoholic and can't manage our own lives. No human power could have relieved our alcoholism. God could and would if he were sought. If I'm not in agreement with those things, I'm never going to be standing on here at this point, because I can't get there. So I remember being told that because it seems very practical when I came to AA, do a four-step. Oh, there's something to do. All this nebulous acceptance crap and, you know, what's powerlessness and what's manageability and how does that play out in my life? That was way beyond my thinking. I couldn't really grab onto it. So I thought, well, I can grab onto this, you know, writing. And what I found out was that what they told me, not what I, you know, like I discovered it, they told me that if I didn't have the first three steps underneath of me, I could no possibility of being able to write a four step. And absolutely could not do a fifth step. So the parts, you know, the steps lead into each other and they're vitally connected. You know, you cannot do it. It doesn't do your world any good at all to sit down and think, I can cure myself, because I thought I could cure myself. I really believed that. I believed with every fiber of my being that my problem was I drank too much. And I needed to figure out a way to stop doing that. I could see that was, you know, I'm not stupid. I could see that was causing me a problem. And I thought if I could just stop drinking, I'll figure it out. So I spent a long time in this program trying to manage the steps. There was no surrender, really. I didn't know I was doing that. But I was doing it. And I got enlightened to that at about 6 years of not taking a drink. That there was no surrender. I really didn't accept those ABCs. I really didn't. So what I did in my first four step was just write a lot of stuff, a lot of events. There was a lot of it. It was an entire box full. You know those banker's boxes? I had a banker's box full of stuff I wrote. And the first inventory I attempted, I wrote like a little story, you know, the story of my life. And I gave it to my sponsor, and she said, that's great. And she handed it back to me, and she said, now go look at the book and see if you can pull out of that what's in the book. So what am I trying to do? You know, I couldn't get over this idea that what I'm trying to do in the fourth step is write down all the bad things I've ever done. And it has nothing to do with all the bad things I've ever done. It's not even about that. What I'm trying to do is what they really describe in the fifth step, the result of doing the fourth step and what you're about to uncover. What am I going to do? I'm going to get a new attitude, a new relationship with my Creator. And then the suggestion comes, there's some obstacles in my path to doing that. That's the way the sentence is written. So I'm not supposed to show up at the fifth step with all the answers. That's the point I'm trying to make. And I thought I was. I'm supposed to show up with it all figured out and all the answers. And that's not, first of all, there's no surrender in that. There's no openness to a new experience in that position and that attitude. So I have to get a new attitude. So what's a new attitude? A direction. And the direction that I had to take was that I don't know the answer. I don't know what I'm about to discover. I have no idea what this person is going to tell me. And there are obstacles to having a new attitude and having a relationship with God. It says it right there in the book, black and white. Did I see that the first 100 times I read this? Absolutely not. Just read right through it. And then it says, we've admitted certain defects. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. So this really does take the pressure off of me. I really don't have to show up at this fifth step with all the boxes checked. I just have a rough idea of what happened to me. What's going to happen as a result of the fifth step is I'm going to find out the exact nature of my wrongs. I don't show up at the fifth step knowing that. And that's absolutely critical. And it makes this later sentence, we think we've done well in admitting these things to ourselves. And then they say there's doubt about that. Again, what the book is saying is that I can't accomplish this. I can't overcome this. I can't come to some conclusion. I don't even know what I'm doing, really. I don't even know what I'm admitting. I'm just trying to follow those columns. And the first fifth step I did, I could not fill in the last column. I just couldn't do it. And my sponsor said, that's fine, just show up, and we'll do that part together, which we did. And then later in the, so now the pressure is off. If you can read this the way it's written, there really is no pressure. You're just showing up with your stuff in your hands, really. And the cool thing about this is the person that's sitting on the other side of you has already walked through this with somebody else and knows things about themselves that they're going to share with you that's going to bring incredible light to your life. And I had that experience in both the formal fifth steps I've done. The rest of the fifth step work, what you would consider fifth step work, I've done through the 10th step in the bulk of my sobriety. So, and the first time didn't have the impact on me that this last time did, I can tell you that. If we skip the vital step, I was sharing with some other folks over the last week or so about that word vital. Absolutely a necessity. They're not kidding. The words that they use in the book are chosen very wisely. And it does help in understanding what it is I'm about to do, because it is vital. I have to do it. I'm not going to be okay if I don't. And I'm certainly not going to get over drinking. And then it goes on to say, trying to avoid this humbling experience, they've turned to easier methods. I have no idea what that would be. Easier methods to figure out, to get a new attitude and get a relationship with my Creator and discover the obstacles in my path. I don't think there's an easier method to that. And then in the next paragraph, they took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. And the first, I have held on to a lot of bad items in stock. So this is not it isn't something that happens one time. You know, you don't do it one time and then you're all pristine and you go on. What I'm able to see, what I've learned about this relationship with my Creator is that what I'm able to see is dependent upon His will for what He needs me to see at that particular time in my life. And I don't have any judgment about that. And I don't get to decide what it is. So, and then it says, they only thought they'd lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty. And my personal experience is that that's what my sobriety is really about. I'm always learning about humility, fearlessness, and honesty. It's a continuing process. That never goes away. If I'm not doing that, if I'm not learning about that, I'm either dead or I have turned a corner and gone in a different direction. Okay.
So we're going to press on 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character, the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. I was thinking when Judy was sharing, one of the easier methods that I turned to was the nice psychiatrist. And I don't want to belittle the psychiatric profession or anything like that. I just know how I treated the nice paid friend that I went to go see. I'm so concerned. I want everyone to like me so much that I won't even tell this person whose job it is to help me by what I'm really about. I start presenting my stage character to them as well. It's kind of insulting here, calling me an actor, you know. But when I look at it honestly, that is absolutely how I live my entire life. You know, here I am. I'm full of fear. I'm afraid of people. I'm afraid to be alone. I'm afraid of working hard. I'm afraid of appearing incompetent. I'm afraid to be, you know, I'm deathly afraid of being embarrassed. That was one of the things I learned in my first four step. Most of the, you know, resentment. It was like they did something to embarrass me. You know, it's like that was one of the first things I learned. I remember looking at it going, oh my, apparently if you embarrass me, I want to kill you. So I had this like, you know, completely over the top response to a relatively mundane sort of a thing that happens to human beings. We feel embarrassment. Triggers rage in me. I'm scared and I have to appear competent. So along, I don't know where I got this idea, and I know I share it all the time, but it was a mode of living where I have to appear. I got to do a little math in my own mind when I show up in a situation. What's called for in this situation? What is, you're asking me a question, I have to think, what do you want to hear? What's the right answer? It doesn't have anything to do with what's true, you know, or honest. It just has to do with what you want to hear, what's going to get me what I want. You know, so I just very much present my character to you. I present my character to my girlfriend. I present my character to my professors. I present my character to my employers and my family. And I don't know about y'all, but it's hard when you get all those people in the same room at the same time, because you kind of show them all a different side of yourself, you know. You seem different tonight, David. Yeah, well, you know, there's other people in the room. Doesn't everybody live like that? Well, I lived like that. I'm very much the actor. And I love this line. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but he knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. Occasionally, I'll trip over an accolade. You know, at work, I'll do something, and they'll recognize me for it. And it feels good for a split second. And then I realize, you know, I cheated when I put that together. I took shortcuts. I didn't really work that hard on it. I really don't deserve the accolade either. So I want it. I get it. Still can't enjoy it. So, and again, when alcohol worked, that was the thing that reconciled all this stuff. You know, once that whiskey rose to my head, when that hit bottom, it didn't matter anymore. Everything was cool, you know. So alcohol stops working. The things that I do on my sprees become absolutely revolting to me, absolutely disgusting. I push those memories far inside myself. And then I get to spend my days in fear and tension. And that, there's no better words to describe that. You know, but that's what it's like, fear and tension. That's what the ride to work is like. That's what remembering what I did last night is like. I'm afraid somebody might have seen me. You know, I'm not that sorry that I did it. I'm just afraid somebody might have seen me. I don't want to be embarrassed. And again, the only thing that reconciles that fear and tension is, guess what? More drinking.
Yeah, so the double life. I didn't even know I had a double life. I thought all these, I had so many things going on in my head all the time. You know, I've been talking recently about being present to the moment, and still today, I still can't do it all the time, every day, all day long. I can't be focused right where I'm standing. But it certainly is worlds better than it ever was in my early life. I remember being my first apartment and feeling like I was like somebody was following me all the time. I just felt like somebody was watching me. It was me. It was me watching me. And I was constantly battling in my head about what I was doing, what I was thinking, who I was with, and I couldn't reconcile who I wanted to be or thought I should be and who I actually was. There was a big gap. And that's the thing about the fifth step. That's what happens. It brings all that. It's the beginning of bringing all those extremes into the center so that there's one person. And I know that sounds like a definition of mental illness, but I suffered pretty, I mean, I did bad. Talking to myself, feeling like I was being watched and I was by myself. It was a terrible feeling. It was a feeling. It was like hung on me all the time. So the only way I could get any relief from that was drinking. You know, I had to drink. Because if I didn't drink, I was probably going to jump off a building or take my life or do something to make it stop. Just make it stop. I didn't know how to make it stop. I didn't know I was causing it. I thought I was crazy. And I bailed myself of all the medical profession since I was 13. And, I didn't like their answers either. Just didn't seem to work for me. And, you have to, if you're going to take this medication, you can't drink with it. Can you do that? Oh, yeah, no problem. And I couldn't. And that was a huge discovery for me. I really thought I could say I wasn't going to drink and I wasn't going to drink, and I couldn't. So I had to go back. This was at the end of my road. I had to go back and say, you know what? I can't not drink with this. So, and actually that person, that psychiatrist, sent me to AA. I mean, she was always, why don't you try going to Alcoholics Anonymous? Why don't you, and I'd come back and I'd go, oh my God, those people are crazy. And I really didn't like that. I did not like that meeting. She said, go to a different meeting. Oh God, okay. So, I do want to say, if there's anybody sitting in the room tonight that doesn't like Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm with you. I despised this when I walked in the doors. Absolutely despised it. I thought, you have got to be kidding me. This is what I have to do, really? I really hated it. I did not feel like I met my family or I was at home. That wasn't my experience at all. And the double life, I just always described it like this. I just felt like I was in a house of mirrors, and every time I looked up, I was looking at myself again in some other masquerade, some other form of myself. And even when I, at the end of my drinking, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm sitting with my husband at the time and talking to him about, I got to go to these meetings, and they said I should go every day, I started to tell him about what was going on because he wasn't there. I'm there by myself, and he had no idea. Neither did my family have any idea what was going on. In fact, when I told my mother, I needed her to come watch the baby so I could go to a, I needed to go to an AA meeting. This is like the third meeting I ever went to. She came over, and now this is the woman that lived with me as a, you know, when I was a terrible drunk in college, terrible. Come home, just stumbling around, cussing her out, walking into walls, passing out, going, not, you know, being missing for days. And she said to me, "What's the matter with you? Are you stumbling around drunk in here all the time?" I said, and I was in such a panic, I said, "Oh my God, I can't explain this to you. Can you just stay here with the baby? I gotta go." Okay. And then the next thing she said to me about 10 minutes later was, "You know, I know you're going to that AA meeting, but do you think you could stop at the grocery store and bring me back a half gallon of wine?" I was like, whew, you know, went right over her head, because she couldn't grasp that this is a problem. So, and that's part of the house of mirrors and the double life. And, you know, if they see me one way, then it must be true. I always was doing that, you know, even at work. If they could see me as being a valuable employee, I must be a valuable employee. And then it would get revealed, and I would have to I would have to leave gracefully. And I left a few jobs gracefully. And what I found out when I came to AA was, you don't get to leave. You have to stay. Because, you know, I that's always what I want to do. This is too hard now. I don't like this. I'm uncomfortable. They're looking at me too hard. I don't feel like I'm performing well enough. I need to go. New job is required. And thank God I'm getting to the point in my life where I really don't have that option anymore. I need to stay where I'm put, you know. But anyway, the double life. That's a double life too, making those decisions. Because that means I can just go, new job, new people, new house, new bank account, new boyfriend, new whatever it is. And that will catapult me into wherever the next spot is. And the, you know, the thing we say about no matter where you go, you're there. And there we are, the house of mirrors. And that's the double life. It's just built a life built on a lie. Okay.
Man walks into a psychiatrist and he says, I can't stop drinking. I can't hold a relationship. I can't hold a job. I can't hold any food down. I've been living like this for years. I'm 50 pounds underweight. I'm dying. Why don't you go to AA? I don't think I'm that bad.
Right. You have some other solution?
Yeah. Is there someone else I can talk to? Yeah. I'm not a first nighter either. I had enough friends when I got here. I didn't need any more. I don't want your number. Yeah. No, thank you.
And stop touching me. That was my big thing.
Huggy people. So we're going to continue on page 75. When we decide to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and we're prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we're engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. It's beautiful and poetic. I love he reminds me all through the book that we're on a life and death errand. I mean, we do have a lot of fun in here, and we're quick to laugh and we joke, and but we really are monkeying around with our lives in here. I believe that's my belief. I remember having that written inventory and driving over to that man's house. He had a little tool shed in the back, or it was kind of a garage converted and a carpentry studio. He was the kind of guy I really wanted to be. You know, he was good with his hands. He could make find instruments as well as furniture and stuff like that. And he just had, and it was all, his whole garage was organized, you know. There were, if you took a tool off the wall, there was an outline of that tool. And, you know, I mean, he just had it in one sock, you know. I mean, I've never been able to pull that off. You know, I appreciate it. It's sort of one of my little goals in life to be that organized, and I just can't pull it together, you know. I've got boxes of things from six moves ago in my house still. I say to, I've been married to the same woman for 20 years, and we, every once in a while we look at each other and go, one day we're going to move in here. But we never quite do. So I go to that garage, and there is a part of me. I trusted that man, and I've got that written inventory, and there really was a part of me that was on a life and life or death errand. There was a part of me that thought, you know, once he really hears how despicable I am, once he really hears the things that I've done, not only will he not want to speak to me again, but he's going to tell everybody in AA. They're going to laugh at me. He may just pull out a pistol and rid the planet of me. You know, these are my meditations as I'm driving over. But I knew I had to do it too. You know, as scary as that was, I knew that this needed to be done. I had now opened the lid on something that I'd, you know, kept locked up tight for a long, long time, and it wasn't going back in the box. I knew that. And so I went and I looked at the floor, and I just let it all go. I just read it. And the parts that were painful, the parts that were difficult, he was he just kept encouraging me, just relax, just take your time. It'll be all right. We got all day. And in just that, in that very sweet, patient, gentle way, he just received all that stuff. And when I was done, he basically just sat back and said, yeah, shit, you ain't done nothing, I ain't done. And then he told a few of his own stories. Some that made me kind of go, ooh, I don't believe I would have done that. You know? But the ride home, the ride away from there was very different. I remember feeling like this was the beginning of the beginning, you know, that old life is beginning to fall away, you know, because for the first time in my life, all those double lives had been reconciled, at least with another human being, at least with one other person, knew everything there was to know about David. Everything he wanted to keep to himself, everything he doesn't want to show you, I had given to that man, and he gave me back some of his. And I can't describe that feeling. I suppose it's something like feeling the nearness of my Creator. I know I wasn't at all frightened when I left there, but yeah, the broad highway. That sounds like a pretty good. I don't know if you've ever had this experience where I have it all the time, where something almost trivial resolves itself. Just some, you know, you get something in the mail that says, hey, this is settled or done, and then you feel lighter, you know. It's like, wow, I didn't even realize how much that was bothering me until after it was solved. And it's like, man, that was really messing me up. Well, it was that, like, times a thousand, you know. I just felt lighter than air, and that was it. That was the first time I'd ever been willing to say any of that stuff out loud to another human being. And had it not been for the simple context of the steps and just doing these things, 1A, 2A, 2B, just walking through the process, cobbled it together. Simple, not easy. Judy?
Yeah, I'm just going to add this. We pocket our pride and go to it. Takes an awful lot of surrender to do this. And the difference between we had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. It's a huge difference between those two things. I had, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought I knew everything about God. I was raised Catholic, and Catholics think they know everything about God. They invented God. And they'll be quick to tell you that. I hope I didn't insult anybody. That's my personal experience with that. And so I was like, of course I believe in God. I know all about God. but I had no understanding that I had a relationship or that God could influence my life or that there could be some rearrangement, internal rearrangement of who I was based on my willingness to surrender to a power greater than myself. And I didn't have to define it. That was the great thing. I didn't have to define it. I didn't have to have what I was taught. And there was really nothing wrong with what I was taught when it was useful as a child. It was very useful as a young child. And I can remember having an experience, a spiritual experience, as a small child. But it never translated as I grew, as I matured, because I started drinking. So once I start drinking, I start getting separated further and further and further away from any power greater, because I am the power. I never realized all those people in my head and all these lives going on. I had created all of that. I had to get sober to find that out. I thought it was you all had done things to me that caused all that. I didn't know it was it's an inside job to be sick. It's an inside job to be recovered. Wow, we're running out of time. So let's go on.
All right, we'll press on. We're still on page 75. I was very upset to learn that after the fifth step, we don't take a month off from the steps. Took 2 years to write that fourth step, you know. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart. We know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page that contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we've omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? I've done probably 6 or 8 full formal fifth steps, you know, full inventories and fifth steps and many 10 step confessions and admitting I'm wrong and so forth and spot check inventories and things like that. And I don't know that it's a net to the bad trying to manage this experience. It's like, you know, the worst thing is to just not do it, you know, because I have gone home and wanted so desperately to have a spiritual experience that I have put this book up on the shelf so that I could then take it down off the shelf, because it says to take it down off the shelf. I'm like, I'm all by myself. Nobody's watching me. Put it on the shelf. Take it off the shelf. Thank God we know him better. That's a prayer. Better get on my knees. Get on my knees, say the prayer, you know. And then as we go back, this little meditation that he invites us to do is to look back through the ABCs again that we talked about in the beginning of the meeting. You know, where am I do I believe that I'm an alcoholic? Do I believe that I'm powerless over this thing? You know, if it was about not drinking, we'd all just decide not to drink, and Alcoholics Anonymous would be like a status update on Facebook, you know. Still not drinking today. Have a good day. You know, but there's so much more here. There's so much more that we're looking for and that needs to change. So as I go back through, what is my relationship like with this higher power? Am I seeking? You know, did I leave anything out of my fourth step that I need to discuss with somebody? And it's basically asking me to ask myself that. You know, nobody's going to tell me that. So the invitation is there. At least that's my interpretation, or what was explained to me, that are the stones properly in place. We're just talking about our first five steps that we've taken. Making mortar without sand, I guess, is leaving an ingredient out. That's all.
Okay. This is an interesting sentence. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Not that I know me better. Important distinction.
Good point.
That I know him better. And then this last fifth step that I did was an amazing experience for me. So when I did this and I came home, In the fifth step, I was sharing something with my sponsor, and she said to me, "That's," and she told me what it was, and my insides went, "Absolutely not. That's not true. Uh-uh. That's totally off. Not wrong. Not right at all." But I've been taught in Alcoholics Anonymous, working with sponsors as long as I have, I don't care what they say or what I think about what they say, I always write it down. I just write down, I take notes. When I'm talking to my sponsor, I have my stuff written down in front of me. I'm ready to write stuff down about what she's telling me, because I need to know what she says. I don't need for her to know what I'm thinking. Do you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I wrote it down. I thought, this is bullshit, but I'll write it down. So I wrote it down, and I got home, and I did this. And I looked at what I wrote down, because I went through all the notes I made while she was talking to me. And I just, it happened exactly the way it's described here. I just had this, what did you leave out? What I left out was something I didn't know about, which was the awareness of what she had enlightened me to that I couldn't connect to until I came home and did this. And it's something that I have not known for 25 years about myself. Something that I had no idea was underlying all my character defects, my fears, everything about this one area of my life. It absolutely changed my insides instantly. And then I got on the phone and called her and told her, did exactly what it says here. I called her and we talked about it more, and I've been different ever since. So, and that's what I mean by, I'm not coming here to tell you what I've discovered. I'm coming here to find out what you're gonna tell me and what God's gonna lead me into that he needs me to know so that I can be happily and usefully whole and help other people. This really is not about me. This whole process, not about me. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. You know, I didn't get that the first time, my first initial experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous, not at all. I just couldn't, I wasn't even there. Thanks.
So we're gonna move on. We've done our fifth step now, and we're gonna do 6 and 7, which are only two paragraphs in the book, and I'm gonna just do them both. If we have more time, we take them apart. But so we've done this little. We've gone home. We're having our quiet hour. We've reviewed the first five proposals. We've asked if we've omitted anything. If we can answer to our satisfaction, then we look at step six. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. When ready, we say something like this: My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step seven. So it was pointed out to me that this, you know, basically the way I was led was that this is done. I had the offer to do it with my sponsor, but the way the book lays it out, it's a private thing, home, quiet hour, solitary self-appraisal sort of thing. But it was pointed out to me that that step 6 and 7, people often remark that these are the shortest paragraphs in the book. There's the least mentioned about these two steps in the book. There's only two paragraphs on two whole steps. And my sponsor just said, that's because you ain't doing the heavy lifting. He says stuff like that. I mean, just a very simple sentence, then I get to go think about that. But it isn't David working on his defects. I'm working on my defect. Let me know how that works out for you. You know, what this is telling me is that I'm the most I can pony up here is willingness to allow God to come in and do that. Take me, everyone, both good and bad. And once again, it's not an exercise in David would be a lot more comfortable if you'd remove this defect, Father, you know. At least the defects that stand in the way of David's usefulness to God and to his fellows. So I don't have any, I'm weak, so I'm asking for strength. I'm obsessed with doing what I want to do. I'm asking for the strength to do what he would have me do this day. That's it.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that progressively, as you progress through the steps, it becomes less and less me and more God. I have the same paragraphs, or the same parts of the paragraphs outlined. And at the end of this, so I know the exact nature of my wrong in every instance that I've written down. And the overall wrong, really, is this self-centeredness that doesn't allow me to be directed by anything. Because if I am going to be of use to God and the people about me, I have to be teachable, directable, sponsorable. I can't be fighting. I can't be debating. You know, I had a sponsor one time who was helping me through a terrible crisis, and she said, "I'll help you, but you cannot debate with me." She said, "I can't take it. I can't take what that takes out of me, you debating this with me. So if I'm going to help you, you're going to stop the debating, and I'm going to tell you exactly what you're going to do and when you're going to do it, and you're going to do it that way, or I'm out." And I was so damn desperate. Thank God she talked to me like that, because I'm just that kind of person. I have to be talked to like that, or I'm just going to play around, you know, in my mind and figure out some other way around, or so there must be a shortcut I haven't thought of yet. And it's directness. I just love being talked to. I know I don't like it so much when it's happening, but I love people who will love me enough to be direct with me. Just tell me the truth, straight up. Because my mind, I needed that so badly, because my mind was screaming so bad, I had to have somebody reach in and be direct with me. Please. Please don't tell me it's going to be okay. Please don't tell me go home and read some book. Please just tell me what is happening to me. Because I'm going to put a gun to my head if you can't help me with this. That's the way I was a lot, most of the time, all the time. In my early sobriety, I was like that. To be honest with you, I don't know how I stayed sober, except for the fact that there is a God, and he had an influence over me, and I had great people in AA working with me. Because I am a candidate for the mental institution and suicide, very much. A very, very sick head, and it took this was a very long walk. I didn't get better in 2 months or 2 years. Kathy can tell you, Kathy's been with me since the beginning, you know. I was here a year before you, right, or two? So Kathy, if anybody doesn't believe what I'm saying, just go talk to her, because she was with me and watched me. She knows of what I'm talking about. And the person I was and who I am today. And this is all the result of not my effort, and absolutely coming to a point where I had to just say, I cannot do this anymore. I have to do what you're telling me to do. I'll say whatever prayer you tell me to say. I'll write down whatever you tell me to write down. Just please, God, make this stop. So that's who I brought to Alcoholics Anonymous. So now I am united inside, and my head doesn't rule me that way. I might have a bad day, I might have, you know, a complaint here and there, but I'll tell you what, there is nothing that happens to me in a day now that's anything like what was going on with me when I first came here. So, and I did what they said. They said, just don't drink no matter what. You just don't drink no matter what. I was like, really? No matter what? Okay. Anyway, it's a miracle.
That's awesome.
Okay.
Back to you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What are we doing? Let's send these little baskets around. Okay, this is our self-support tradition, seventh tradition basket. Seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The amount of our contributions is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Do we have any announcements tonight? Yeah. Sir.
I'm Greg, I'm an alcoholic. 49th Street, living sober, becoming a home group, having a speaker, February 28th at 5:30 from Richmond, and a cake. So please come.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Volunteers to go to the Virginia Beach Jail. We go on Mondays and Fridays at 7 p.m. So if anyone is interested in that,
Chris will go. I'm an alcoholic. My name's David. And the Simple Actions group, this group, right here in this room where you're sitting right now, on April 1st, we just got confirmation that Christy E. from Richmond is going to come down and tell her story at our next supper and a speaker event. So Mark, put on your jester's hat and mark your calendar for April Fool's Day, 6 p.m. potluck, 7 o'clock speaker, right here in this room.
Okay. Anybody else? Announcements? Okay. We have literature on the back table there. We have big books. They're marked on the inside cover. Do we have any newcomers with us tonight? First 30 days, new to this meeting?
I'm Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Welcome.
Welcome. Okay, sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you don't delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Okay, and thank you to everybody who came tonight and participated. After we clean up, we're all invited to and encouraged to continue the discussion on this step that we covered tonight, and all are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting at Bella Pizza.
Bella Pizza.
Are you going to read?
$5 pies. Doesn't put any money in our pocket. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless and bless you and keep you until then.
Amen.
Circle up. You're still thinking about the prison.
Focus.
Focus?
John, would you like to lead us?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Welcome, man.